And Dr. Bruce Goldberg with us this hour. It's a split show. Next hour, of course, we are going to be talking about Planet X with Marshall Masters. Make sure you're part of the show. We will be back in a moment. We're going to talk about teleportation and take your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Bruce Goldberg with us. Bruce, before we go to the many calls for you, teleportation, huh?
Yes. Well, let's talk about teleportation. First, again, one quick thing. People are so confused. They asked me about that CD offer. If they buy the book, Exploring the Fifth Dimension, through my site, they get the free CD. If they just want the written exercise and don't have a computer, if they call my toll-free number, they get the written exercise. But please, folks, if you have a computer, everything is on the site. Videos, articles, everything is on there. Also, 18 of my books are now in audio. Amazon Audible has 18 of my books in audio books, those that like to listen in the car.
Well, a lot of people who are here visually impaired, too.
Right. Also, if you're listening to a book on the car, you know, it's auto-hypnosis. Okay. So let's talk about teleportation.
Teleportation and then
okay.
Your many calls.
Here's a statement of one of my patients who actually described what it was like to teleport. I'll just quote just a few sentences. It felt almost like I was caught in a giant web. Suddenly, the world exploded into countless billions of glowing threads. They stretched away in all directions, and they intersected everything, including me. The overall effect was very similar to looking at a hologram, except it was visceral as well as visual. You could see/feel the image. Now, when people do teleportation, by the way, is safe. You're not going to wind up underwater or in the middle of a mountain and die. That's not going to happen. I've never heard of that. And I've teleported myself, as I've described in the past, as well as my patients. If you are observing somebody who's actually being teleported, you will see their body slowly fade away and disappear. Not the Star Trek sprinkles, okay? That's Hollywood. That's not going to happen, okay?
But it looks so good, Bruce.
I know it does. And Scotty isn't there either with his Scottish accent. Okay. Nothing else in the environment would be altered, okay? A person undergoing teleportation would experience an increase in the energy vibrating at a high speed, like an out-of-body experience, except it's much higher vibration. Remember, teleportation, you're physically moving from one place to another. An out-of-body experience, it's the soul that's occupying a different body in the spiritual dimension. Physical movement is teleportation. Now, you also have a tingling, buzzing sensation and a feeling of spiraling upward. Often a popping sound, we heard this before about out-of-body experiences, will emanate from the top of the head. Your body must be well-rested to assure success. It's the most difficult technique in hypnosis, I can tell you. There's nothing more difficult to do than teleportation, and it's not predictable either. You will find it easiest to teleport at night, since your body has had many spontaneous teleportation experiences while dreaming. So dreams are not only out-of-body experiences, but people have actually teleported. Women have reported their husbands disappearing for several minutes in the middle of the night. But they didn't go anywhere. The car was there and everything. They didn't leave the house, and they reappeared, okay?
Is this conscious teleportation or unconscious?
No, it's not unconscious. It's semi-conscious because they're in the REM cycle. So they're not unconscious, but they're not aware of what they're doing. Okay, let's
put that almost up. Like sleepwalking.
Yeah, except sleep teleporting. Okay. The natural tendency is to hold your breath during the teleportation because it is an extreme experience. Safe, but it's weird, okay? You must resist the temptation and breathe consciously and take slow, deep breaths. You want to oxygenate your brain. It will help you to facilitate the experience. You will feel lightheaded with a swirling and upward spiraling sensation during the process. Sometimes the feeling of tightness across the eyebrows, the third eye area, is described, and your perception at your desired location will appear as if you were looking at your location through a keyhole. It's a very unusual experience. And remember the case I reported a couple of years ago about that the case, a woman, I call her Vivian, who was on the freeway in Los Angeles here, and a boyfriend, a very abusive one, threw out of the car, and she was about to be killed by coming somebody.
And disappeared.
And she just remembered the post-hypnotic training that I gave her, because she worked with me with teleportation, out-of-body training, and she thought of that technique, and the next thing she knew, she twisted her ankle so she couldn't move away from the car that was coming at her. The next thing she knew, she was in her apartment on her living room couch with a very sore ankle. The car went through where her body was. Both her boyfriend and the car in the opposite direction observed it. They stopped the car, and they freaked. They said, like, what is going on here? You know, She went into the tear in the fabric of time in the fifth and into the fifth dimension, teleported back to her apartment. And thank goodness, as I work with her later on, she dropped this guy, broke up with this guy, and met Mr. Right.
Well, let's hope so.
And that's pretty heavy stuff. This guy could have been. This is like murder, manslaughter, whatever time.
Okay? Bruce, we've gotten calls from people during open lines where a car is coming right at them. They're in another car, mm-hmm. and they both seem to blend into each other and come out, and nobody got hit.
Right, and this is almost like a time slip experience too. It's very similar. In what you're doing is, remember, these are tears in the fabric of space time. One of the problems with time travel from our future, the first 300 years of time travel, they use a device called the WLA, the Wormhole Linear Accelerator, which enlarges a wormhole to classic size and allows a team with a vehicle to go through that and back in time. The problem is when they did that for 300 years, the 31st to the 34th century, they caused tears in the fabric of space-time, which is why fish fall from the sky occasionally. No one can explain why, you know,
yeah, like that. Or frogs or something.
Like the Fortean phenomena.
That's right. Right?
Okay. So these are tears in the fabric of space. It doesn't destroy the universe, but it doesn't, you know, it's sort of like having leaks in your raft in the pool, you know, it doesn't help. But by the 35th century, of course, teleportation will be used to go back in time. And the time travels in the 35th century are far more sophisticated and spiritual than the earlier ones. So, but these are things that explain the mechanism of teleportation. Now, let's go back and let's finish this up here with the idea of ascension now. So what is ascension? Okay, this is a very complex mechanism, but this is what we get from this. Okay, the actual mechanism of ascension is really unknown, but this is what we're getting. Our soul has to be raised in its frequency vibrational rate. So access to the higher self does that. You're actually merging with the higher self on the soul plane. That's the highest dimension. That's not part of the karmic cycle, but it's not part of the God planes either. It's the DMZ, as I call it.
Mm-hmm.
You're in between. So it's like, okay, so you're merging with the higher self, that brilliant white light. You're becoming one with it. That's what atonement, at one minute with your higher self. We become perfect and ascend from the soul plane to the higher planes to join God. Now, the soul's electromagnetic components are reoriented on the soul plane, which allows it to enter the zone of the higher planes. The soul cannot leave and rise above the soul plane unless this reorientation is completed. Our soul connects with the higher planes through a form of geophysical time warps openings, and the entire reorganization takes place through many combinations of energy waves called, now listen to this, intergalactic lines. Remember the intergalactic line healer of the time traveler who helped Eileen in the hospital with pancreatic cancer. See?
That's right.
That was called the intergalactic line healer, okay, the ILG. So the intergalactic lines really come from the God energy complex. It's perfect. It can heal anything. It can do anything. But it also helps us perfect the soul by having it merge with the higher self, and then you can ascend. Now, it is on the soul plane, not any of the lower five planes, as we call this, the earth, astral, causal, mental, or etheric. That's part of the karmic cycle. Those are lower planes. The soul plane is the sixth plane, which is neither a lower plane nor part of the higher plane. This is where the last spiritual body is shed. You will lose the spiritual body. You become pure, perfect energy with the higher self. And the soul merges with its perfect counterpart, the higher self, and it assumes the form of a brilliant white light. And that, folks, is ascension.
Let's take some calls here for you, Bruce. Angela's in New York. Welcome to the program. Hi, Angela.
Oh, hi. Good morning. What an honor I get to start things out. Thank you. Thanks for a great show. I agree with all of your suggestions and techniques of, you know, not to distract yourself with incense and peppermint, so to speak. But one thing that I differ in is that I find that a very cold room really facilitates me flying around at night.
A cold room.
I wanted to give a specific incident, but I have found out that airplanes actually have an easier time flying and use less fuel because cold air is denser. So,
well, Angela, first of all, I love your name, Angela, like angel, so that's a good start here. But whatever works for you, I'm just telling you, from my experience with nearly 40 years of doing this, is that for most people, maybe not for you, but for most people, the warmer, maybe 72 degrees, maybe 73 instead of 70, for example, will facilitate it. It simply just works most people. The literature shows that too. Now, in your case, if you like it, you like it chillier, that's fine, but I'm just telling you, I'm dealing with people that are novices, that have tried, gone to every workshop, read every book, and tried every CD or MP3 file, and have failed. So I'm trying to make it as easy as possible for the novice to get oriented. Once they get oriented, they won't need to do all the rigmarole that I'm mentioning. It'll be very spontaneous, just like natural self-hypnosis and doing anything that you've done many, many times before. But for most people, the majority, okay, the warmer environment is simply facilitated. That's not just my research. It's what my colleagues would say, too.
Bruce, psychic attacks, how can you stop them?
Well, you can use protection techniques. Now, on my home, on my website, the homepage, there's five exercises, and one of them is psychic protection from negativity. So if you know, people use the white light and stuff and things like that, and that's fine. But here's an example of a little summary of this. This is from the exercise on my website. Imagine that your physical body is a honeycomb, so that you are so porous that any energy coming towards you will flow right through it without affecting you in any way. Keep your attention completely focused on the image. Now visualize a trap at the back of this honeycomb mesh screen, and this receptacle traps any form of negative energy and immediately neutralizes it. Okay? And it goes on. These are techniques that visual imagery is not really, you don't have to visualize things in detail. The point is you want to bring in what? The higher self. The higher self is the white light that people always try to use. The higher self is your protector. It will protect you. It doesn't matter what technique you use. If you access the higher self, the superconscious mind, you're going to be protected. And if you keep away from the drugs and all the other things we talked about, then you're not going to have the same problems of people who wind up consistently going to the lower astral plane.
Good point. Curtis is in Buffalo, New York, east of the Rockies. Good morning, Curtis.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for having me.
Sure thing.
I've got an experience here that I don't talk about too much to people because I think I'm a nut job. But what I believe was an out-of-body experience because I've had many dreams like many of us do, and I've never had anything.
Okay, tell us what you had here. I'm very interested.
Well, I was sleeping on the couch. I wasn't drinking. I wasn't doing drugs or anything. And next thing I know, I'm in this beautiful white space room, just endless room. And I'm feeling love, just like an indescribable amount of love, just so much love. It's just flowing through the body and everything. And I'm coming up, and then there's this group of people sitting, and I come down, and I'm not a very religious person at all, I'll tell you that. And I'll tell you, Jesus Christ was sitting there and talking, and I said, I can't believe this, you know? And he was speaking, and he sneezed, and I laughed. I said, God bless you. And he laughed and he touched me on the forehead and said, God bless you. And the love that I felt before that, well, when he touched me, it was about a million times that love.
What kind of an episode was that, Bruce?
There's a difference here. The lower astral entities like to play games with people because 99% of the time people go to the lower astral plane. There's one thing they can't do, and they cannot fake love. This is an ecstatic, this is what they call ecstasy. This is what the shamans would call an ecstatic experience, okay? And they cannot, if you feel love, and I don't doubt that you did, okay? If you feel love, and by the way, when you see Jesus, it could be your higher self, you know, trying to masquerade as that to help you, to make you feel comfortable, et cetera. So we don't know, you know, what was...
That's possible.
Okay, that's possible too. So don't worry about whether you actually saw Jesus or not. What was most important about this is that you are on the upper astral with this beautiful ecstatic experience, because when you have those kind of feelings of love, this is unconditional love, okay? That is, you cannot, under any circumstance, be on the lower astral plane. On a lower astral plane, you're going to feel like you're in a really bad neighborhood on a Friday night, you know, and the gangbangers are at the corner, okay? Here, you're doing the opposite. And so this was an example of the upper astral plane, not the lower, By the way, if it really, let's say there really was Jesus there, you would be on the mental plane. That's where the masters hang out, the Moses, the Jesus, the Buddhists, etc. The mental plane is characterized by iridescent blue highways and people wearing angelic smocks and geometric design buildings. So there are always...
Can we all get to that level, Bruce?
Yes, with practice. I mean, the exploring book, I do go into the definition of all the little characteristics of all the different dimensions so they can figure out where they are. But once you start using, the astral plane is where you're going to go to first. I mean, that's the easiest dimension. It's a very large one, the second largest of all, second only to the etheric plane. And that's where people will go initially. And once you get used to it, just like driving a car or riding a bike, you know, once you get used to it, then you can start to be more in control and say, you know, I don't want to go to the astral plane anymore. I'd rather go, I think I want to go to the causal plane where the Akashic records are stored. Or I want to go to the mental plane to meet some masters. Or I want to go to the etheric plane and meet the etheric plane surgeons to do surgery that can be transferred back to the physical body because it's identical to the etheric body. So there are techniques like that, and I describe all those, where you can be more sophisticated, but you've got to have flight time here. You got to log it in. Initially, that's not going to happen to anyone unless they're a very gifted person. You have to crawl before you can walk. So get your experience on the astral plane, and then you can get more sophisticated and do your thing. And then, what you want to always focus in on, if you're having a bad experience, if it's, when I say bad, not dangerous, but if you feel fear, if you feel tension, if you feel like you're in junior high school, you know, get out of there. All you have to do is wiggle your finger or your nose or whatever. Move any part of your body, and you're going to come out of the out-of-body experience. You're going to come right back to the physical body.
Sleep paralysis that some people have. What causes that?
Well, sleep paralysis is a natural part of the sleep cycle. Okay, we have a 5-stage sleep cycle. The REM cycle is stage 5, and paralysis is part of... See, the reason why we have paralysis by Mother Nature, God, or whatever, is because we're supposed to get rest at night. All right. Primitive man needed to hunt and fish and whatever they were doing. So, and animals all do that too. So what happens is the only way you can really rest the body, because the body goes through a lot of gross motor movements. You know how you wake up in the morning and you're on a different part of the bed and, you know, your sheets are all over the place, right? Well, with the paralysis, you're going through what's called the delta level, where you're actually almost dead to the count. You're actually almost unconscious, almost like a flat.
Right. Can't move, can't do anything.
And this way you get your rest, you see? I mean, like, for example, I always talk about my adorable Karma III. Now she's going to be 4 years old in December, okay? And when she was a little puppy, what she would do is, and anybody else a puppy, they sleep like 15 hours a day, right? Right?
Like kids.
They run around. They go, they run around, they're panting, and then they chase their toys, and then they go out and they whatever, and then they just sleep. Why do they sleep? When they're sleeping, their bones grow. They're producing hormones and enzymes in their body, the chemicals. But the bones are also growing, too. They're going to get bigger. I mean, puppies will grow up. So the point is, in sleep paralysis, the same principle. You need the paralysis in normal sleep so that you actually rest the body. Don't forget, we destroy millions and millions of cells. We have enzymes and hormones and neurotransmitters that have to be reproduced. Serotonin and all these things and endorphin, all these things have to be produced. And you can't do that if you're on the run. You've got to be absolutely motionless. And people by themselves are very neurotic and hyper and too much sugar in the body, and they don't do that very well. So Mother Nature helps us by giving us paralysis so that we're forced to relax.
Bruce, we're going to come back and take some final calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, Marshall Masters joins us as we talk about Planet X. Make sure you're part of the program. Beyond Belief, Dr. Bruce Goldberg was one of our guests, did a sensational job. This Friday, our guest is magician Brandon Scott. He did a great job. He's from the Magic Castle here in Los Angeles. And just, you got to watch what he does. But it's free for 10 days. So go to our website, click hosts, click TV. You'll see that open up and then fill out the information. You can also look at all the videos. And you can go back and look at Dr. Bruce Goldberg's show, too, and see some of the things he said. We're going to come back and take final calls with him on Coast to Coast AM. Back with the master of reincarnation and time travel and soul healing, none other than Dr. Bruce Goldberg. Bruce, let's go to a few more calls here.
George, before we go to the calls, I just wanted to make a comment about 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago today was a very significant day.
What happened?
Well, we're talking about ET abductions for a moment here, okay? The most statistically now, they estimate about 7 to 8 million Americans have been abducted, okay? Statistically, the most common month of the year to be abducted is July. The most common day of the year of the month to be abducted is the 24th of the month. The most common day of the week is Wednesday, and the most common time is 11 p.m. 2 weeks ago was Wednesday, July 24th. So at 11 p.m., I hope none of your listeners were outside hanging out in a wild, in a woody area, because they were in trouble.
They're not with us anymore.
No, but that's a true story, though. This is like it comes up.
I like that. Let's go to Culver City. Sure. Jeff's with us, west of the Rockies. Hi, Jeff. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, how you doing, George?
Good,
Dr. Bruce Goldberg. Yes, when it comes to this out-of-the-body activity, which seems to affect only a certain chosen few, I've noticed that whenever someone comes forward to try to explain his or her travels in that interdimensional or multidimensional realm, they're easily dismissed as mental patients or liars. My question is this, Dr. Goldberg. If this type of activity isn't real, why were so many people like J.B. Ryan, Russell Targ, and Harold Pudoff, among others, so curious and intrigued with these abilities? And why did the military and intelligence agencies spend so much money on these programs if the activity wasn't real?
Right, like SRI in Stanford, I got you. Okay, look, first of all, you made one statement I have to correct. This is not an unusual experience. Every night you're out of the body for 3 hours. This has been reported all the way back. I showed you the picture on the figure two on the highlights on the homepage of Georgia's site, showing you that this has been reported for 20,000 years at least. Every culture reports out-of-body experiences. The Aborigines spend most of their days out of the body. So this is something like, you know, there's a law in science called Wattley's Law of Evidence. And it's actually not a theory, it's a law. This is what it says. If people from all over the world that have no communication tell you the same thing, it must be true. So we've got out-of-body experiences reported in every single culture throughout history, recorded history, et cetera. So the science is there. I've given examples of the EEG things, the skin experiences, the dream laboratory research of Krippner and Ulner and Charles Tartt at University of Virginia and University of California, Davies. The evidence is there. It's just that there are just people, Jeff, who simply don't want to hear the truth. They just simply are very skeptical, negative, cynical. Their attitude is life sucks and then you die. And those kind of people you can't.
You can't change their minds.
No, you can't do anything with them except walk on by, as Dionne Warwick would say, you know.
Doug is with us in New Orleans, east of the Rockies. Hey, Doug, go ahead.
Hi, Dr. Goldberg. Thank you for taking my call, George.
Sure thing, Doug.
What I wanted to ask about was that sometimes I've had recurring over the last several years, and I can't predict when it's going to happen, but I have had these dreams, I guess they're dreams, but where I will be in the presence of these, I don't know if they're people or souls or what. Yeah. I can't put a face on them, but I see them in a certain area that comes back and recurs to me, and they're very, very friendly. And quite often when this is going on, I'm hearing these voices, I believe, of these souls, I would call them, or entities that are speaking to me, and I think to myself, oh, here we are again, okay, there they are again. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, we got to go now, and
Doug, this is a very important question. How do you feel emotionally during this? I'm assuming it's a telepathic communication. How do you feel emotionally? Do you feel positive and happy, or do you feel afraid or anxious? How would you describe your emotions?
Very, very positive, very comforted.
Just like the other caller we had earlier before the break, this is an upper astral plane experience. So those entities, those beings could be spirit guides. They could be fellow astral voyagers. They could be the higher self could be coordinating this. This is a good experience. Remember, you always go by the emotions. The lower astrals cannot fake feelings of bliss and positivity. So when you have a positive emotional state, and this is for the listeners out there, folks, because I get a lot of calls about this, and they say, well, gee, Doc, am I going to be in trouble, or how would you evaluate this? If you feel good, if you feel emotionally positive, if not ecstatic, then you're doing it right and you're on the upper astral plane. So this was a good experience. So, by the way, the fact that you're having this several times, it's encouraging. They're trying to communicate with you and probably for your own spiritual growth. So I would work with it.
Tell me more about ley lines on this planet, Bruce.
Okay, ley lines are very interesting. These were a lot of structures in Europe, for example, and around the world have been built on these lines. They're very, very spiritual kind of centers. For example, like in England, the The Giza Plateau, for example, is another example where these things are lined up on these ley lines or these spiritual line centers. And what's important about this is that in the 1920s, an Alfred Watkins was a businessman, an amateur archaeologist, and he observed that whole areas of the English countryside are crisscrossed with straight lines indicating ancient tracks that join hilltop churches, et cetera, and prehistoric monuments. And he called them ley lines. He named them. Okay. There's a ley line connecting Salisbury to Stonehenge. And the theory is that these ancient monuments might serve as condensers of electrical forces, and they might unite spiritual forces, or they could cause tears in the fabric of space-time, and therefore levitation, teleportation experiences would be relevant. Here's a couple of examples. One of these ley lines runs through a great stone circle at Glastonbury, which is the site of the legends of King Arthur and Joseph of Arimathea from the Holy Grail mentality from the Old Testament, from the New Testament. These lines were man-made, according to Watkins, and these tracks he deduced were initially laid down between 4000 and 2000 BC. Now, the Nazca lines in Peru are another examples, okay? But here's a couple ones. In August of 1936, Stephen Jenkins viewed a group of medieval warriors on the Cornish coast near where King Arthur was supposed to have died. The scene vanished shortly, but reappeared and disappeared at the same spot 38 years later. And one last one, very impressive one, an unexplained phenomenon took place at Chaktonbury Wing, which is an ancient earthwork circle on the south coast of England. This former Anglo-Saxon fort is located at the nodal intersection of five ley lines. And on August 25th, 1974, one William Lincoln was lifted 5 feet into the air and suspended horizontally 30 seconds before returning to the ground. Three of his friends witnessed the event. These are all fifth-dimensional experiences. So ley lines represent the form of an energy vortex. And by the way, you can't suspend yourself for 30 seconds. Try it sometime, folks. My hypnosis technique won't let you do that, okay?
I can't even do it for a few seconds.
Okay, so, and it's not Spider-Man either. So my point is that these are examples of very odd experiences. But ley lines, you know what's funny about how the Catholic, a lot of the Catholic churches, you know, in Europe, they were built on the sites of the mystery school temples, and they were built on the sites of ley lines. So a lot of spiritual things happen. That's why a lot of the initial teleportation and levitation experiences are with religious figures, bishops and priests, like St. Maria of Agreda in Spain, a teleporter, et cetera. She's well-documented teleporting. Let me just do that for a moment. This is something I didn't cover it before, but I'd just like to spend a moment with this. This is a very interesting case. St. Maria of Agreda in Spain was a nun between 1620 and 1631. This nun, physically never leaving the monastery, nevertheless, by means of teleportation, made more than 500 trips to America, where she managed to convert to Christianity a tribe of Yuma Indians in New Mexico. All right? Now, this was studied. Now, the Indians declared that their transition to Christianity was due to the woman in blue, as they described her, the European nun who left them with crosses, beads, and chalices, which they used in their masses. They were converted to Christianity. Okay, so it has been established that this chalice belonged to a monastery in Agreda. Okay, they checked it out. And later in 1631, Father D. Benavides visited Maria in the monastery in Agreda and asked in detail for her to summarize her experiences with the Yuma Indians. The stories were completely coincided with what the missionary saw, and Maria even managed to describe customs and clothes of the Indians in detail that she never physically, at least physically by our current definition, was supposed to have known. Documents of the Spanish conquistadors, the French researchers, identical stories of various American Indian tribes living on distances of many, many thousands of miles, all described and confirmed St. Maria's experiences. So she teleported from Spain to New Mexico over 500 times 400 years ago. And she's a very, she's a religious person, you say, but she's a nun. She's not an angel here or a spirit guide. But those are examples of teleportation that you cannot explain in any other way other than the physical movement of the physical body from one place to another. She wasn't there in her astral body. She was there physically. And that's teleportation. That's the T word.
Let's go to Monica in Artesia, California. Thanks for holding, Monica. Go ahead.
Yes, good evening, George. Dr. Goldberg. My question is regarding the out-of-body experience. Do I have to know the physical address or location of the person I wish to visit?
No, you don't. All you have to know, you really don't have to know a whole lot of anything. The more you know, the easier it is. A physical description, if you concentrate, if you have a photograph of them or some physical description, if you have an object that they may have given you or you shared with them, that kind of thing would help. But no, you don't have to have their street address and zip code or postal code. That's not necessary. In fact, that really won't even help. What will help really is more of the physical description so you can identify their physical body and preferably their soul's energy. That's what you're visiting. It's not delivering the mail. You're actually visiting their energy basis of their soul's energy.
Bruce, in your hypnotherapy practice, are you seeing anything unusual, any kind of pattern of something, anything impending that people are beginning to see?
Well, what I'm getting is people are having more spontaneous metaphysical experiences, you know, like whether they're seeing numbers on the license plates on the freeways or whether they're having these DOP, disappearing object phenomena, you know, where you can't find your keys or something.
And they pop up.
And all of a sudden, and you left them on the bedroom dresser, nobody else took them, especially if you live alone. And all of a sudden, an hour or two later, they just reappear and nobody moved anything, okay? No, I'm getting a lot more metaphysical experiences, and I'm getting people with much more. You'd be surprised. I'm getting blue-collar workers, construction workers that I would think would be the last candidate to be New Agers. And they're getting very interested in not just my work, but the field itself, the various disciplines. I'm seeing a lot more openness and positivity. You know me. I'm Dr. Positive here. And I'm seeing, instead of people just being whining and complaining and being cynical, I'm seeing a lot more of an angst of society, at least what I'm seeing and patients I see, of being a lot more positive and open to the spirituality. I'm seeing corporate executives. I have people with, like, investment bankers, my goodness, okay? You know, people in three-piece suits coming out of their kazoo, and they say, well, they can't discuss this with anybody but me. Their colleagues would either fire them or mock them. But I'm seeing a lot of natural interest in the New Age phenomena and the metaphysical approach, especially healing. Remember, healing always comes up. I tell you,
it's a topic that
all roads lead to Rome. And I was in Rome last year. Believe me, all roads do lead there. Okay, and the people want to benefit. They want to not just learn about things and be titillated by things like out-of-body experience, teleportation. That's fine. But the reality, you know what they say? They got problems. And they want to resolve them, physical, psychological, energy, whatever you want to call it. And they want the healing part along with the other stuff too. But they want the healing, and that's why you get a lot of questions about healing.
Let's go to Houston, Texas. We've got Bruce now. Hey, Bruce, thanks for calling.
Hey, George, thanks for having me on.
Sure thing.
I had a question about. Well, first and foremost, I'm a Christian man, so I'm not too sure about the reincarnation. Because that would mean there's a finite number of souls.
No, actually, that's not true, Bruce. That's not true at all. There are, the mechanism is a little complicated, but a soul can occupy more than one body at one time. And in one individual oversoul, as we call that, if it occupies three bodies at one time, and each of those three bodies split and occupy three other bodies, that's called the geometric progression. In a mere 13 generations, one oversoul will occupy over 1.5 million bodies. So there are no new virgin souls today, and it does explain the world's population. And by the way, I know you. I understand you have a problem with reincarnation. I had a problem with it in my last life too.
Not so much. I have a problem with reincarnation. I'm just teasing.
Okay.
All right. Well, I'm open to possibilities, but my brother just had a baby, and I just find it a little hard to believe that, you know, somebody like Heinrich Himmler might be in there, or somebody like that's coming back. I mean, because you're going to have bad people coming back.
Well, those people are going to be sharing a condo in a lower astral plane for a couple of thousand years. But how do you explain Da Vinci? How do you explain Mozart writing concerts, operas at age 5? How do you explain these child prodigies that Da Vinci's father was a notary public? Okay, he wasn't exactly a physician or a scientist or an artist. Mozart also, he came from a musical family, but nowhere near the accomplishments. I mean, Edison, Steve Jobs, you name it. You get these people who come from nowhere, and they do this. So you can't really explain that by just natural laws or natural odds of chance, of random chance, etc. It just makes sense. I mean, you know, and I know If you want to do the research carefully, in my initial book, my Past Lives, Future Lives Revealed book, would give it to details, the history of Christianity before the various ecumenical councils, initially, at least before the government of Rome was the one involved with Council of Nicaea and the Fifth Ecumenical Council in 553 A.D., reincarnation was a part of the Christian religion. A man named Origen was a 2nd and 3rd century writer, a Christian theologian. He was second only to St. Thomas Aquinas in the writings, and he was an overt reincarnationist, if you Google him or read it, some of the quotes in my book. So reincarnation was a part of all religions. It's simply a matter of who decided to decide some, do some editing, and mostly it was done by governments, not by the church itself. So it really isn't a problem. And, again, I'm not trying to preach anything here. I mean, if you don't believe in reincarnation or don't believe in most of the New Age disciplines, you're welcome to it. My purpose here is to have people grow spiritually, and whatever that means. There's 3,000 religions on this planet, okay? People are welcome to their First Amendment rights. But my point is, how do you treat others? How do you treat your family? Are you hypocritical? Are you a good moral, ethical person? Those are the things that determine my judgment of a person rather than what religion they believe in.
Well, there's no question about that. Bruce, what's new on your plate? What are you working on?
Well, working actually on a potential 2 television projects, actually.
Good for you.
And one will hopefully be a series next year. So those are projects that I'm working on. And always, my always big project is always working with you, and in whatever capacity. I love being on the show. And so I will always keep you informed, as you know, about my projects. And I would just like, as I'm getting near the end of the show, people have been still a little confused. If they want to get the free CD, Exploring Fifth Dimensional Travel, to go out of the body, if they order the book, Exploring the Fifth Dimension, directly from my site, or if they call in to the toll-free number, then they get the free CD. If they just want the written exercise and don't have a computer, they can call the 1-800-KARMA-4U, which is 1-800-527-6248 number, and they'll be sent that immediately. And also, people can do sessions by computer. I do Skype sessions from people from all over the world, so they don't have to travel to Los Angeles. And my site has a lot of articles, tracks of the time travelers on there. There are videos, clips of 13 of them, of people doing everything, time travel, Jerry Springer's past life. So there's a lot of things they can do and learn from going to the site.
All right, Bruce, thanks so much. Up next, Marshall Masters, Planet X on Coast to Coast AM.